everybody, and welcome to a very celebratory edition of Talking Tigs. I am very excited, Scott Girard. Joining me, as always, is the uncontrollable Tommy Johnson and the raving Daniel Zollinger. Got the LSU series, the Super Regional against West Virginia to go over. Tigers take it 2-0. Nothing more to be said. We're going back to Omaha, and we got that to break down. I don't think there's really anything else that really needs to be talked about except that, but happy to do it with you guys. It was a good weekend for baseball all the way around. We'll get into some other stuff too, but want to check in with you. I know, Tommy, you actually were able to go to one of the games, so I'd love to hear what you had to say about it. But, you know, of course, we'll do our introductions, but good to see y'all.
Yeah, good to be with you. Man, good to be celebrating our second College World Series appearance of this podcast, which is pretty awesome. I mean, like you said, I got to go to game two, and had an awesome time. Got to try out the new seats, I think they're called the Loge section, which is like right where the old bullpen used to be. So right. It was very close. So great atmosphere. I mean, that was the best atmosphere I've ever been to as far as a college baseball game. I mean, clearly I'd never been to a super regional before. So, but LSU brought it, the fans were there. The energy was there, and Tigers got it done. So excited to be talking about it with you.
Yeah, it feels good for all the Tiger fans across the country going back to Omaha after 2 years, so not that long of a break. But it is where LSU baseball thinks they belong, and this is the 20th time they've gone there. So definitely have made their mark on the college baseball landscape. And I did see Tommy on TV last night. I wish I could have been in attendance, but I saw him perusing that little menu for some treats in the Loge section. but that was pretty cool. And I had some other family members at the game. So definitely jealous of the environment, but glad the Tigers got it done. No late season letdown. It seems like we're hitting our stride at the right time. So that's exciting. And we got big tests coming up in the World Series. And I guess we'll break all that down for y'all here in just a second. We actually have one more game going right now, Murray State versus Duke to finish out the World Series lineup. But then the eight will be selected.
Yeah. And thanks to these guys, that's probably why we don't have any schedules yet. I guess we're all just waiting on them to finish it up. Everyone else got their baseball done yesterday, but these guys want to drag it out and make it about them. But just kidding. Murray State, man, they're already up 2-0. These guys aren't playing. Neither are some of the other teams that, you know, I think probably surprised some people, because all these juggernauts that people thought were going to take it all, not LSU, like UNC, they're gone. FSU's out. A lot of the ACC teams are gone, and man, I guess, well, there's still Louisville, but I don't think anyone thought that would have been the one. But anyway, Tommy, real quick, your seats, was that the Talking Tigs box, or was that something else?
Yeah, that was the Talking Tigs box. They called me ahead of time and said, you know, they wanted me in attendance. Sorry, y'all couldn't fly in, but
that's all right. That's all right.
We held it down.
Yeah, thank you. More on that in a second, because again, we want to hear your vantage point from where you were in full detail. But just to run it down, I don't know. I thought we could kind of do like we used to do with football. You know, you do the offense, the defense, everything else. Because I mean, there's only two games. Tigers did it in two, and they did it probably in a way that people may not have guessed. Something we definitely wanted to see, but the bats were alive in Baton Rouge. Jay Johnson obviously mixed up the lineup for game one. I don't know. I think people have had issues with him changing the lineup before or starting certain pitchers. Well, I mean, Jay Johnson's right. I guess we can all stop second guessing him and just let him do his thing, because he knows what he's doing. Tigers exploded for 16 runs. And, I mean, like I said, West Virginia is a very gritty and scrappy team. They definitely didn't quit. They got 9 runs themselves. But Tigers were just so far out in front. And early on, it was basically like, you know, what we'd call garbage time TDs. But it was just, you know, Mountaineers gave it their all, but LSU was just way too much, starting with Cade Anderson on the mound. But, I mean, just I guess for a second, we could just talk about the offense. Finally, it's what we've seen. I don't know if that's, just Jay tinkering, because game two, it kind of went back to what we normally see, but they produced a lot of runs as well. Tommy, I mean, you were there for at least one of them. What was it like? Was it, could you kind of feel it was a looser environment? Maybe these guys were just letting loose?
I think you do have to give credit to West Virginia. I mean, they hung in, and they hung in game one for a while, and or came back in game one, and then hung in game two for a while. It shows you one, how critical errors are in this level of baseball. I mean, those two errors by the second baseman at West Virginia last night really, I mean, in a lot of ways cost them the game. Because that led to, you know, a spree of hits and runs. But you know, missing those routine pop flies was pretty detrimental for him. But as far as the atmosphere, the energy, I felt like, I mean, I wouldn't say it was a tight, like I wouldn't say they looked tight yesterday, but they definitely looked focused. Like it was not, I wouldn't say it was loose. I think that they were, you know, they knew what they had to do. Had a decent, not outstanding outing from Anthony Ianson. You know, I think he struggled towards the end of his outing just a little bit, but overall, pretty complete performance by LSU on both sides, offense and defense. And, I mean, very excited. I think that, they played really well. I'm glad they took care of business in two games. I think that bodes well for us in Omaha. And I'm just excited to see Kate Anderson on the bump against for a rematch against Arkansas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. We had positive performances pretty much across the board. The biggest thing that stood out to me was the kind of clutch hitting with two outs, two strikes, et cetera, in big situations. Like in the first game, Derek Curiel kind of ripped it open with a 3-run home run. I believe that was in the third inning, or no, yep. It was later than that. The fourth inning. And then after that, that was when we had the seventh spot with the Stephen Milam grand slam. And then another few runs on the home run coming after that. So we won in multiple ways with the long ball and aggressiveness on the base paths and just really clutch hitting. And we saw that again in the second game when it was Stephen Milam breaking the game open with the bases clearing double that whipped right past Tommy on the first base line to the right corner. That was cool. Got the crowd on their feet. And then at that point it was 4-0 LSU. And we're kind of, I mean, West Virginia hung in there. Like you said, Tommy, you gotta give them the credit for that, but it wasn't quite bagged up, but we're like, all right, I think we're in pretty good shape here at that point. And Anderson and Ianson, they weren't their dominant selves, but they were good enough to get the job done. And I think the heat and the environment was kind of getting to everybody and pitching on both sides, because it was hot out there and people were melting, especially West Virginia's starter in the second game, the guy with the big mustache. He was having a rough time.
and they're lucky. I mean, they're lucky that they had that extended rain delay, because it was like I saw on the temperature gauge or whatever on my iPhone at 5 or so, it was like, feels like 105. It was hot. So even at 8 p.m. it was hot, but the West Virginia was not built for that kind of weather. Their pitching was, you know, they weren't deep. They just weren't deep enough for to be able to compete with us. I did a little bit of reporting and talked to a West Virginia fan this afternoon, and he basically said that that the pitching, they knew going into it that pitching was going to be a challenge for them, and depth from the bullpen was going to be a challenge. And I knew that. We got after that starter for West Virginia in game two, and really rung his pitch count up. I think he had 73 pitches after four innings. So,
or after two, I think he was up there. He was like 67 after two innings. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So it was, So, I mean, like, yeah, you know, once we got through that starter, there, you know, they just didn't have the bullpen to be able to hang around with us.
Yeah. And it was interesting that they, you know, some of the other parts of the order, you would think maybe Jay Johnson would try and tinker with, you know, Jared Jones is still solid. Like he produced against, you know, in the regional when he, even though he was, you know, had a little bitty slump there, but it's like, he did that, but he put Curiel towards the back of the order, which you'd think that guy's an automatic, like he's an on-base machine, but again, just wanted to mix it around because you still have Josh Pearson, who is very good.
Playoff Pearson.
Yeah, he's not Curiel as good as he is. He's, I guess, not as good against lefties. And West Virginia's ace was one of the best left-handed pitchers in the country. But it worked out. I mean, the guy got us started off with, like you said, a three-run homer. And then LSU had two grand slams in the same game. Go figure. Yeah. One from Oster Meilen, almost looked like that Warren Morris home run in the 96 World Series. Then there was one from Josh Pearson representing West Monroe for you fellas. Couldn't imagine, right? Like you'd think one of those and LSU would feel like, yeah, this is LSU. But we had two? That's amazing. So definitely worked. And then, you know, game two kind of went back to what we usually saw. But still, you know, there were some adjustments there. We had Tanner Reeves in instead of Braswell for the longest time, I guess maybe just to mix up the offense. So happy to see that. And, yeah, I mean, 16-9, 12-5. I don't think there was any other regional that had that much separation, or excuse me, super regional that had that much separation, right? Everyone, like a lot of these guys went three games. Some that did go two games, I don't think their victories were that big. Coastal Carolina's, I think, was what? Four to three, I don't know. But anyway, I think we overachieved in that regard. It wasn't the box. It'll be different in Omaha, maybe not, hopefully not, but at least I feel like we got our mojo back offensively, right?
We've talked about it. You know, we talked about it for the past couple of weeks on this podcast, and it feels like LSU is trending in the right direction. I mean, clearly, you're going to Omaha. That's a win in and of itself. They're getting hot. I think that, I mean, Vegas has them as the odds-on favorite to win the national championship. I mean, it's exciting. And you know, I don't want to say standout moment for me, but a highlight for me was Chase Shore's performance last night to close it out. Mm-hmm. I thought he looked really good. Mm-hmm. And better than he has. I mean, you know, I feel like in his last outing, I forget who it was against. Maybe it might have been against Little Rock. He had a real hard time finding the strikes.
Yeah. It was.
So, you know, I like that. I think that success in Omaha is still going to depend on our relief pitching.
Agreed.
We're going to be able to, I mean, Anthony Ianson and Kate Anderson are going to be able to give us solid outings. We've seen that. That's been all year, but the challenge is going to be, and I don't think we're going to run into, I mean, clearly like, well, if we make it all the way, we might run into an issue with a game three. Like, who do we start? Is it in Case and Evans, kind of duct taped game together? I don't know. I mean, yes, I would imagine so, but that's a bridge we'll have to cross. But I think that really the what's going to determine our success is going to be who can come in and deliver quality innings for us when Anderson or Ironson finish up.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree. And they did it really efficiently against West Virginia this past weekend, which is a positive sign because both starters went their normal kind of routines, going about six innings. And then the relief pitching, I guess with the exception of William Schmidt, who had some kind of command issues, issuing two walks in the first game, we had good performances. Yeah, by Maverick Rizzi to close out game one. And then in the second game, you called out Chase Shores to finish it. He put 101 miles an hour on the radar gun to dot it up and close it out. So if you can get that type of heat from him and a few others, then that's tough to deal with. And in the middle between Ianson and Shores was Cooper Williams, who threw almost three innings himself. And he's a name that's kind of come on strong late in the season. Didn't get that much look.
He looked really good.
Yeah, didn't get that much playing time earlier in the season, but he's done well. And yeah, he's kind of that good, I guess, bridge relief guy who, I mean, that was the role he played in this one. And those are the guys who, yeah, like you said, do need to step up in Omaha when it's just a gauntlet of one game after another against quality opponents and you burn through your pitching fast and somebody's got to make a name for themselves. So if he can pitch like that again, then we'll be in a good spot. And we didn't even use guys like Cason Evans, Zach Cowan, Jacob Myers. Like, I mean, all these guys are getting 2 weeks worth of rest basically. And that's another advantage to getting it done in two. So we get that extra day off to ice the shoulders up, get a little tinkering in the batting cage for the hitters and be tuned up for the trip. I'm not sure when they're flying out there to Omaha, but imagine over the next couple days. But yeah, excited for that trip and to see kind of how things shake out, because we have a very tough test with the first game against Arkansas, the highest ranked team left, number three in the country. And what a lot of people think, I mean, whoever comes out of LSU and Arkansas is going to be the odds on favorite to win the whole thing. So that game one is supremely important, and they haven't announced the schedule, but I think it might be that Saturday night kind of primetime game first round. And if we close that one out, then we'll be looking good. But if not, it's a long uphill battle.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, and you could kind of tell what Jay was doing. He's done that the last few weeks, you know, starting with the SEC tournament, as far as how he's going to use his pitchers. If we have a big enough lead, yeah, at some point he's like, well, I'll drag my arms until I have to replace them. And then, yeah, I mean, LSU had what, a 10 plus on lead. So yeah, maybe I don't need to bring in Evans and Cowan, cause you know, West Virginia's no slouches. Maybe I'll need those guys for game three if necessary. So, he puts in Will Schmidt, wants to see what he does. And it didn't work out. So then he, you know, brought somebody else in. They did the job. Same with Ianson. You know, he could have gone to counter Evans, but no, he wanted to see, you know, what other guys could do. And lo and behold, somebody stepped up. Cooper Williams, Chase Shores stepped up. Like you said, even though he didn't look the same three games ago, but it doesn't matter. that's the beauty of baseball. It just doesn't matter. Every game's different. It would be nice to see some other thing, you know, some other guys step up, but obviously Jay knows he can save Cowan and Evans for games three or four, because all he really needs is somebody to give him like four or five innings. And if we can build a lead like we did this weekend in both games, LSU could probably ride with whoever is left, right? Just keep knocking out hits, just keep driving up their pitch counts and going through their pitchers, because by games three or four, everybody in Omaha is screwed on their pitching. So yeah, it's not really until like the championship round where you're kind of back to your normal schedule. So I think LSU will be sitting pretty at that point. And then, yeah, after Arkansas and LSU, there's no SEC teams left. So I think our toughest challenge will be game one. And yeah, we did beat them 2-1 this in our home series. But again, that was then. This Friday or Saturday is going to be different. I agree with you. I think it will be Saturday for that prime slot. Also, just because, you know, LSU and Arkansas both wrapped it up yesterday. So I don't think it would be fair to give them the Friday night slot, but we'll see. We're still waiting on this one game to be finished. Just really amazed. I did want to touch on some other games, but yeah, any other thoughts from you guys first?
Only on the Arkansas game, you mentioned that LSU beat them 2-1 in the series at the box about a month ago. That first game is probably the pitching matchup that we're going to see on Saturday between Cade Anderson from LSU and Arkansas's ace, Zach Root, who had a really good performance against Tennessee in their super regional. So definitely one to watch out for. Not exactly reminiscent of the LSU versus Wake Forest, kind of Paul Skeens versus Rhett Lauder game a couple of years ago, but definitely could be a decider there. And that was one that went into 10 innings into extras at LSU that we pulled out 5-4. So very evenly matched teams. Arkansas is a great team, both offensively and on the mound. So it's going to be a tough out. And then the The other side of kind of our half of the bracket is UCLA and then the winner of the Murray State Duke Super Regional. So UCLA is another good team. They swept theirs, I believe, and then could be against the upstart Murray State Racers or the Duke Blue Devils. So maybe not quite as formidable there. I think Arkansas is the one that we're both most familiar with and probably most scared of on our half. But just to like reiterate, it's the same kind of double elimination kind of regional format on the half of the bracket, so that winning that first game is really paramount, because if you don't win that first one, you have to win three in a row just to make it to the finals, and that's very tough to do. So yeah, good luck to the Tigers, and I guess stay safe to all the LSU fans heading out there, which I know there will be many of people that I know and everybody else. So that's Baton Rouge North, and wish I could be there with them.
And yep. just prepare yourself for the Jello shots. Are we going to beat our
defend our title?
Defend our title, and are we going to beat our own title?
Only if Gordon McKernan comes in with the check like he did last time.
Gordon and wasn't Todd Graves there soon?
Isn't it the Canes guys too?
Todd Graves, the Canes guy, was there. So yeah, we'll see. That's another component of this Omaha run. We all have to pay attention to
Baton Rouge North, indeed. But real quickly on LSU, they did. I mean, there's interestingly enough, three guys exited the program after their regional win. Just great timing. I don't know why, but I guess just to make themselves known. But LSU did pick one up from the portal already. We actually played him earlier this year. He played for Kansas State, Seth Dardar. I remember that name because it's very, you know, very specific, unusual, I would say. But he actually is from Louisiana, so he's basically coming back home. That's what his post on X said, coming home. He went to Holy Cross in NOLA. So, yeah, he did pretty well against Cade Anderson, actually. He went 2-for-5 that game. This was at the Frisco Classic, by the way. Where we played Kansas State and others, but he went 2-for-5, home run and a double. So guy can definitely hit against, you know, quality pitching. So yeah, happy to have him. I think that was all the other portal news we had coming in, but man, I thought it was going to be a great weekend for college baseball all around. And it was. You know, Daniel kind of touched on some of the results earlier already. I mean, Texas San Antonio's run comes to an end. UCLA also, they did it with like riots going on around them, which, I mean, it was like less than a mile away, which the stadium is like less than 2 miles from their campus. I've actually been there because when LSU was in the, I believe it was the 2009 or 2010, they played a regional out in LA against UCLA. UCLA won it. And I don't know if that was when they went on to win it all, but I remember seeing them there. It was all right stadium. Now, I mean, LSU didn't win, but that was the only bad part about it. Then what else there was? Louisville took care of Miami 2-1. Duke is still playing. Arizona took care of UNC. UNC beat the brakes off of them that first game, and then Arizona just came back and shut them down. A lot of people thought UNC was going to be a contender. Guess not. Then you also had Arkansas and Tennessee. Like you said, Arkansas blanks Tennessee. I mean, they were pretty much in control both games. They handled their business. Tennessee, I don't think they just didn't have the arms outside of Liam Doyle, who was, you know, very pumped up. But like, and that's like his game against them. He was already out in the fourth inning, and Vitello was bringing in other guys, and they just couldn't hold it. Arkansas just busted it wide open. Then there was Oregon State, Florida State, another 2-1 victory for the Beavers. They're going to be back in it. They didn't even have a conference, really. They had to piece together a whole season. They look pretty strong. What was interesting is I had a chance to watch a lot of these games, all of them reporting, like, record attendance, even Auburn, but, like, yeah, it's kind of cute. Some of them were like, oh, we have a record attendance, most attended game ever. Thank you, fans. It was like 3,900 people at one stadium. Auburn's was like 7,800 plus. I'm like, oh, thank you. And I'm like, that's cute. I think LSU had one of their fifth highest ever for a super regionals, like just over 12. don't know if it was.
It was standing room only, like 3D.
Yeah.
I've never been to a game that now. I mean, I know that there have been games at the box with more people than that, but I'd never been to one with that many people before. It was great atmosphere.
And it did look like they added seats, right? Because a lot of teams like Auburn, they put bleachers on the roofs of one of their buildings in their outfield. Remember I was telling you guys about that? There's nothing back there. They just had to add bleachers. So that's how they achieved their number. Lost both games, which is just hilarious. But, I guess they didn't really – there's not really a place to add bleachers at Tiger Stadium unless you did it behind that wall, because I don't think there's anything behind the outfield wall except – you know, like Gators running back and forth, the grounds crew guys just having a space to walk, because there's nothing really behind that except another parking lot. So
train tracks.
Yeah, I mean, it's big enough as is. We don't need to add seats.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
On the attendance thing, I noticed that too, that pretty much every park seemed to be full, which is a good thing for college baseball in general, especially with, I think, kind of the downward trend in attendance in the MLB and stuff over the last few years, that people have been picking up the college game. And I think that's a product of maybe a better list of guys on the field. I mean, college players are staying longer, developing their craft before going to the MLB. And I think the overall college sphere is kind of really embracing baseball as that third sport. I mean, it always has been after football and basketball, but I think the enthusiasm over the last few years is growing. And that's overall positive, especially for a team like LSU, where baseball has pretty much been number two after football for the longest time. And we've been in the game for so long. So nice to see. And yeah, some of the other games were really exciting. I watched Oregon State, Florida State in that first game, when Florida State was up 4-1 going to the ninth inning, down to their last out, and then Oregon State hammered out three runs to tie it, sent it into extras, and then they won it in the 10th inning to break the Seminoles' hearts, and then went on to win the game 3. I have a lot of Florida State fans in my office, and there were some sad people there today. I try not to rub it in too much in the LSU camp, so I'm glad we're going to Omaha and they're not. But yeah, I mean, plenty of good teams moving on, like Coastal Carolina. They're on like a 20-something game win streak for the Chanticleers, and doing it to Auburn in their own house is pretty tough, and you got to respect that. They won, I think it was 2016 when Coastal Carolina won the College World Series. That's the only time they've ever even been to Omaha, and they won it when they went there. So history could repeat itself if that happens.
Was that the year that they beat LSU to go? Because they beat LSU at home, like at a super regional.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was that year. So maybe not fond memories for LSU, but we wouldn't meet them until the finals if we did.
Right.
And then Arizona coming back from 1-0 down, showing some grit against a very good North Carolina team, Jay Johnson's former team. So we couldn't meet them in the finals. That would be a pretty interesting storyline if we did.
Right. Yeah.
And so good matchups across the board. Murray State continues their Cinderella story if they do take down Duke today. So going to be entertaining. The first game's Friday, so Friday and Saturday kind of the kickoff games, and then all the way through next week. So going to be a marathon 2 weeks of college baseball.
Yeah, and don't you dare call Coastal Carolina Cinderellas, though. The coach said not to, because they are a premier program. Of course, I get it. He's got the mic. Might as well say something like that. And he just doesn't – like he truly believes in his guys, and they really did look tough against Auburn. They look like – you know, it was they were the number one team coming into town, beating some team that barely got in the tournament. So it was – it'll be interesting to see if they can carry out. They won like what, 22 or 23 games straight to finish out the season. That's how you go into Omaha, but LSU's no slouches themselves. I think we're doing pretty good with what we've done. The only other thing I'll say is just looking at a lot of these other stadiums, you know, they're nice, but, you can tell they're all just like very brand new turf fields, not even real dirt, probably. They look nice, but they look, you know, too nice. They're perfect. So I don't know. I hope LSU doesn't change and they keep their natural outfield. I know they have a turf foul territory, but keep the outfield the way it is. That's, I think someone has to at least remain natural, right? Why not the perennial powerhouse of LSU? And just a lot of different outfields, too, man. Like some have none at all. Louisville had like a wire cage and then all of their fans were sitting on a hill. Imagine just Derek Curiel facing that. And then on the other outfield, there's nothing back there. It's just black and white action shots of their players on the wall. And then there's a batter's eye, and then you could see a train going in the background. It's just crazy, you know? But after this, everything will be in Omaha. And, of course, they have that whole stadium decked out. It would be nice to go there, and it would be, well-received as an LSU Tiger. I do have a cousin there. I don't think I'll go, but I'll let you guys go. I'll let you guys know if I do get a wild hair and decide to do that. I'll do some broadcasting live for us. Other than that, man, it's what a weekend, you know?
Yeah, no, great weekend. Just exciting. Excited to be back in the mix, and congratulations to Jay Johnson on a really well managed team
on saving his job.
Yeah, I agree. Because there were some, I think it was more message board trolls than anything else, but some people kind of questioning Jay Johnson towards the middle later parts of the season when we had a few kind of head scratching decisions, maybe, and a few losses to teams that we shouldn't have. But I mean, the guy got it done, gone to Omaha, and he's done it. I think this is his fourth time to Omaha in 8 seasons as a head coach total, including Arizona. So every other year, you can't complain too much about that, including one national championship. So job well done, and excited to see what this weekend brings.
Amen. And just for a quick recap, the Women's College World Series is over. The Longhorns end up beating Texas Tech, winning their first national title. Guess Texas is trying to make a name for itself in the SEC. They're walking in and look like they belong almost. Texas baseball did well. They did okay until they got to the postseason. But now Schlossnagel, I think he's probably more in a hot seat than Jay Johnson would be. And something else coming up this week is track and fields. The national championships for outdoor are going to be up in Eugene, Oregon, Nike Town, as they usually are. LSU's got some contenders. I think they could probably take home a national championship. If nothing else, the women's 800 meter with Michaela Rose. There could be some other places they could win it, but that'll be going on. We'll try and get some results to you from that, because Tigers are always competitive with track and field. But other than that, I did want to mention one other thing. When I was watching the UNC game, or one of the UNC games against Arizona, saw their football coach, Bill Belichick, there down on the field. He was actually signing baseballs, too. No sign.
Would you like to have a baseball signed by Bill Belichick?
Yeah, I know. What are you going to do with that? It's a novelty item for sure. didn't see his girl... his manager.
I was about to say, I'd rather have one signed by his girlfriend.
Right. Anyway, I don't know. That's all I had. You guys got anything else? Anything to slip through the cracks?
I think that's it on my end.
No, that's all. I've got some family members. My parents are going to Omaha this week. So I know they're trying to catch some games. Hopefully they get to the ones at LSU. The tickets are always kind of crazy with like the sessions and the prices drive up. But they'll be there supporting the LSU through and through. So yeah, safe travels to all the fans going up there, and go Tigers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of, I was curious what the sales were going to be for like the Baton Rouge Regional. I thought it might sell out, but there's always aftermarket, and yeah, there was some going for quite a bit. I checked Auburn too, since that's only like an hour away. That's the closest super regional. Do they still had some? Because they have like a standing room only on their outfield, that green monster.
Mm-hmm.
The other places too, I guess those bleachers they added, $40. That would have been totally worth it. And there's a Buc-ee's right there. You can't miss. Yeah, I didn't end up doing it, although I probably would have enjoyed myself too much in hostile territory. I don't know if I'd have worn my LSU stuff. Who knows? But anyway, maybe next year. So I guess that'll pretty much do it for us here on Talking Tigs. Tune in next week. We will have at least, the first round coverage of the Men's College World Series in Omaha. Tigers going to do whatever they can to make it to the finals. So hopefully we can continue talking about them for another week, which is what we want, because that'll get us another week closer to football, baby. But until then, hope everyone has a great week. Stay safe, stay tuned, and we will talk to you next time right here on Talking Takes.